Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up President Doug Tuthill talks with Tom Arnett, Senior Research Fellow in Education at the Christensen Institute. The two discuss blended learning models that forecast the future of learning. In the time of COVID-19 accelerating changes in public education, both men believe technology can enhance education opportunity and reduce inequity. How can public education begin to unbundle services like the rest of society to better serve their communities? Those questions and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
Today I'm excited to welcome Tom Arnett from the Christensen Institute. Tom is the Senior Research Fellow in Education, and I've been a longtime admirer. Tom is one of the more innovative thinkers in education, and of course the Christensen Institute really focuses on disruption, and you guys write a lot about disruption in education, so we're excited to have you on the podcast, Tom, so welcome.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Doug.
My pleasure. So you wrote a really, thought-provoking piece the other day talking about a couple different models as we move into this hybrid world of public education. And you talked a lot about enriched virtual model versus a flipped classroom model. Why don't you just sort of give our listeners an overview of that, and then we'll do a deeper dive in some of the implications for that.
Yeah, so our institute, let's see, around 10 years ago, went out and documented what's going on in terms of how online learning gets used in brick and mortar school setting. That was all pre-COVID, of course. But from that, we landed on a set of different models that can be seen as kind of archetypes of how that often happens, how online learning and brick and mortar education often come together. The piece I wrote that you mentioned talked a little bit about where do we see these models potentially being valuable for schools in the fall. I will say up front, a lot of it depends on whether or not schools can open. If schools are completely closed, if the buildings are completely closed,
right,
these are blended learning models, right, and so they won't really apply.
Right.
But if schools are able to open partially, I think some of these models could be super valuable. In particular, the enriched virtual model is where it's a model that was born out of virtual schools realizing that some students need a little extra support. And so they started to set up little centers where students could come in maybe just for a couple days a week, maybe for a couple hours a day, to get some face-to-face support as they work on their online courses. And so, you know, in the assumptions many are making right now about schools being able to open potentially, but only have students come in shifts, which means students probably can't come every day, every student, it seems like a super relevant model to learn from. Because there's been folks that have been doing that model, the enriched virtual, for years. You know, there's some valuable lessons in terms of what do you do online, what do you do face-to-face, how do you communicate when you're not face-to-face every day. When I mentioned that piece is the flipped classroom. Flipped classroom was not designed for COVID context.
Right.
It's the core idea behind it is that students, you know, you do a lot of the just covering foundational content at home by accessing online resources that a teacher either creates or curates. So think of like the teacher video recording their lecture, posting that online, expecting students to watch that at home independently, and then when they come to class, instead of spending the time covering that material, you can just dive right into problems and projects and activities that deepen the learning. And educators have found it's valuable to do that because that's often where students need the most help. It's valuable as they're doing problems, working on activities, to be there with the teachers. The teacher can give feedback, right, as opposed to just doing that at home and getting stuck and not having much insight. So right, it wasn't designed for COVID, but I think the philosophy behind it of thinking through what is best to do online and what is best to do face-to-face can be really insightful as schools have to think about that, given that students may not be able to come in face-to-face every day.
Yeah. When I was reading your piece, I made a note to myself, wondering if this is moving us towards the long-held goal towards competency-based education. I remember, you know, in the 70s when I started graduate school, we all fantasized about a world where we move off from one-size-fits-all, you know, Henry Ford assembly line education to being flexible enough to be able to move towards a system of customization and competency-based education. Do you see these kinds of models and other models that are complementary? Are these moving us toward a competency-based world in public education?
So I think they can, but it's not a foregone conclusion. It's not a guarantee. Blended learning is not inherently mastery-based or competency-based, but what it does is it makes the logistics of mastery-based and competency-based way easier. For one of our research projects, I talked to a teacher a year or two ago about how he ended up adopting blended learning, and he actually was bought into the idea of competency-based before blended. He wasn't a tech guy. He didn't want to do technology. But what sold him on blended learning was realizing that to do competency-based by hand is a lot of work. It's a lot of creating a bunch of individual activities, curating those, setting them up for students, you know, just the logistics of explaining them, distributing them is challenging, and then grading all that material. He's like, I can't keep up with doing that. But when you could use online learning to make it a lot easier to just point students to learning resources and have at least at the foundational basic and understanding level, lower depth of knowledge, lower depth of learning, have the software grade students and give them immediate feedback, it all of a sudden made mastery-based a lot easier. So I think there is a huge opportunity to leverage this moment and to leverage online and blended learning to move in that direction. But again, I don't think it's a done deal. You know, it's a very different approach than what schools and educators are used to. It requires a different grading system. It requires you to think really differently about how do you do scope and sequence, because not everyone's moving the same scope and sequence. And given just the degree of that shift, I also see schools struggling to say, you know, online learning, that's helpful for right now, but mastery-based, that's a little too far. We're not ready to go that far yet. And so, candidly, I think some schools will take the opportunity right now to move in that direction if they've already got, you know, if educators are already thinking about that and trying to figure out how to make it work, this could be a great way to go that direction and try it out. But schools that are just trying to get their legs underneath them in terms of figuring out what they're going to do in the fall, many will probably say, that sounds nice, it could be really helpful, but it's just too much of a stretch for us to figure out on top of all the other things we're struggling with.
Yeah, I mean, I've been having these conversations with my educator colleagues for 40 plus years now. You identified the core problem, which is, I've been in a zillion public hearings where we've talked about this and people said, I can't execute it. You know, it's a great theory, Doug, but get out of the ivory tower. In the real world, we can't execute. And I think that there's all this technology that we've never really used effectively to enhance teacher productivity and student productivity. And I'm thinking maybe now the technology will start to be used more assertively and more comprehensively, and all that coming together. It's ironic it took a global pandemic. I mean, that's obviously horrific. But, you know, it's like the pandemic is forcing us to start looking at this technology and beginning to use it in ways that we could have been before, but now we have to. And that might open up all these possibilities, like you said.
Yeah, I think of it, to try and put it concisely, it's like there's still barriers to adoption, but the barriers are a lot lower. Yeah. A, because the technology makes it easier, and B, because the pandemic, you know, pushes us in that direction.
This quickly also leads us to teacher training. I mean, you sort of hinted at that. What's your thinking about how we ought to be thinking about teacher training with all these possibilities on the table? What are you guys thinking about it at the Institute?
Yeah, well, a lot of, as we studied the range of blended learning options out there, there's definitely some that are easier entry points and some that are more challenging and take a lot of thought and a lot of preparation. I think of, for easy entry points, something like a flipped classroom isn't that hard.
Yeah.
Especially because flipped classroom doesn't have to be mastery based. You don't have to figure out that piece of it. It's just, okay, instead of giving my lecture in class, let me learn how to use video capture, screen capture software to record it. And I'm already probably using an LMS because schools more and more are buying devices. So now I just got to figure out how to upload it and point my students to it. That's a relatively easy shift. Going full bore into mastery can be more challenging. So I guess I see schools right now should just kind of figure out what is feasible for us and use that as an entry point. What's encouraging is we've also seen in our research that schools that start off at an easy entry point, as they get good at it, will move to more complex models. So one of the simpler models we've seen is what we call station rotation. It's right. basically elementary centers with a computer center. Right. But I had a colleague who documented a couple years ago how teachers that started with station rotation, as they got good at it, moved to more of what we call a flex model, where students are all working, you know, kind of doing much more individualized, personalized activities, not moving all at the same pace. So I guess I'd see like there's a spectrum and you kind of find the entry point that works for you. A couple places I point in terms of, because I know many schools are, they probably have the practical question of like, well, so where do I get started?
Right.
I think one easiest entry points would be, there's an organization called Modern Classrooms Project, and they've got a lot of resources on their website, both free resources and also a paid version where you can get support with adoption in addition to just accessing the resources. And they help you, I think, in a pretty, as simple as it can be way, get set up with a basic blended learning model. And their model, I think, is also fairly adaptable to remote learning if schools find themselves in that circumstance. The Learning Accelerator has some good resources on their website as well. And we don't update it actively, but it's more of just the repository of the research we've done. But we have a website called blendedlearning.org where you can also go and learn a lot of just the foundational things about how blended learning works.
So as you talk about these things, Tom, I think about it from a parent perspective. Obviously, the entire country is now homeschooling at some level, you know, or full-time homeschooling, really. And so parents have been thrust into a whole new role. As you talk about these various models, how do you think about parenting and as it relates to their new role in public education, which is obviously going to continue in the fall? I mean, no schools are going to open up full-time in the fall the way they did in the spring or before the virus. What you're thinking about, how do we engage parents? What kind of training do parents need? How do we help parents fulfill their growing role in public education in a way that's comfortable for them and all the things they have to do in their lives? I mean, have you guys given much thought to that?
You know, one thing that I found really interesting in all this as a parent was that I think conventionally, there's kind of some arm's length distance handoffs between schools and parents. It's like you have a schedule that tells you when to take your kid to school, you drop them off, and then you come pick them up at the end of the day. And while they're at school, that's the school's job, they take care of things, and you're not very involved unless you're really proactive and like volunteering in the classroom. And in terms of knowing where your kid's at academically or what they're learning, you may get a folder home at the end of the week and you're not really sure what to make of it. Yeah. You get report cards every quarter or every semester that give you real high level data. But as a parent, I often found myself wondering like, well, what are my kids really learning? Because I thought, I can make this learning much better for them if we can talk about it over the dinner table, or if we can go on family outings on the weekends that are, you know, adding to what they're learning in school. But often as a parent, I just felt out of that loop. And so I'm finding that right now, I think, is necessitating a greater interdependence between school and home. Schools can't just say, hey, hand them off to us at the beginning of the day, we'll take care of it, we'll hand them back. It's like, no, nothing. Kids aren't going to learn unless parents are involved and unless parents are supporting. But that also means parents can be much more attuned to what are their kids learning and support more effectively. So my hope in all this is that this leads to some innovation in terms of how schools and parents and families communicate and coordinate with each other. And I think it's frankly a lot easier now with some of the technology we have, you know, whether it's messaging apps or other things. There's ways now to close those communication loops and create that integration, and we just now need to figure out how to do it well. In terms of, you know, supporting parents, another thing I'll say, it's kind of a lesson learned from us. A couple weeks into this, we switched our kids to a virtual charter school. And I don't want to say that's the answer for everybody, but for our kids, we found that they were struggling, their schools were struggling, and we thought, let's just put them in an option that will, you know, keep them back on pace with regular learning. That being said, we found out pretty quickly, when you sign up for a virtual charter school, especially for elementary age kids, there's an assumption going in that you as the parent are going to be a learning coach, and that that's going to take 2 to 3 to maybe even 4 or 5 hours a day of working with your kids. The challenge is that while a school where you know that going into it can make those assumptions, the average district school can't do that. They can't assume that parents can play that role and be that involved. And so I think, to me, it's just been an indicator of, like, different families have different circumstances. And I think as schools think about the fall, they need to think not of what is the one-size-fits-all option that's going to work for everybody, but rather think of what are different options we can give to different families depending on their particular circumstances. So, for example, you know, you may decide, a school district may decide that, you know, for our families where parents are first responders and they need to be working and they can't be home, or our families where, you know, potentially low-income families where, like, both parents are working multiple jobs, maybe focus doing, if you can open up your building, have that space and that time be in particular to support those kids as first priorities, and then have other options that are more for the families that can say, yeah, I can take care of things at home because I work from home or I only work part-time. And also families that may say, you know, I prefer to just stay at home and not deal with the complexity of how my kids might bring home COVID or other things from going to school. So I think that's been my thought, is like, how do you create different solutions for different families depending on their differences in circumstance?
Yeah, I had two thoughts while you were talking. One is, that's a great description of the unbundling of services. You know, some families, historically, the brick and mortar building has bundled all these services. Childcare is bundled with academics, after school, you know, extracurriculars, all kinds of things are bundled together. As you were talking, I'm thinking, well, here's some unbundling. Some families need childcare, some people don't. Different kinds of childcare at different times. So really, like the rest of the society, basically, and the rest of the economy, public education's got to figure out how do we begin to unbundle our services also and be flexible enough to know that not every family is going to want the whole bundle. You know, not every family wants to buy all their streaming services today. You know, it's happening all over the society. You know, yeah, I want HBO and I want Disney, but I don't want Netflix or vice versa, whatever it is. But, you know, so as that unbundling is happening elsewhere, it's also going to happen in education, I think. And that's part of what I was hearing you talk about. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think whether it happens really depends on decisions that school districts make. But I think there's both, you know, from the school district's perspective, you know, kind of an imperative to do it. Because if you don't do it, you're going to end up with a lot of kids that aren't learning, a lot of families that are frustrated. So I think now is a time where more than ever, they should think about how do we do that unbundling to better serve the communities that we serve.
I also had a thought about equity while you were talking. Obviously, you know, your kids won the lottery, you know, to be, for you as a dad and for your wife to be a mom, you know, that's a pretty good deal. Not every kid wins that kind of lottery. And as parents become more integral part of the education, just they have to. But some parents have way more capacity than others. And that's always been an issue, of course, with out-of-school learning, summer learning, et cetera. But there's a potential this is going to really exacerbate all that. What's your thoughts about how we can get our arms around the equity issue and use this as an opportunity to reduce equity as opposed to increase inequity?
Well, I think it's really important to call out that this can go both ways.
Yeah.
Like, it can make equity issues worse, and it could potentially make them better. You know, there's real challenges of, you know, at a basic level, how do you provide equitable education through distance learning when not every student has devices and Wi-Fi at home? And when not every student has a parent who can be there and is involved when they're at home? And where not every student has the same, you know, community resources and other non-school learning experiences that will keep them their learning going even if school can't provide it all. So those are, I think it's really important to recognize those are real, and this could very well get worse in terms of equity because of those just realities that we all face. I do find it amusing sometimes when people are calling out those inequities as if they didn't exist before. So for example, like, you know, people are saying, you know, kids are going to be at all sorts of different places when they finally get back to school because some will learn more than others. And when I heard that, I thought, well, kids were already at all sorts of different places.
Yeah.
It's not like this is new. It's just more obvious now. So I'm hoping that, you know, that increased attention hopefully brings increased focus on how do we really address that. And I think, you know, some innovations like mastery-based learning can help that. Because instead of just saying, well, we have to assume everybody's a certain level, we can say, well, let's find out where everyone is at individually and give them the supports they need from where they're at to catch them up as quickly as possible. I think there's also a huge opportunity where innovation can help with equity, the innovations that come about right now is, you know, when schools first started to close, we all heard a number of schools saying, look, like, we can't do learning because we can't make it equitable.
Right, right.
And they said, until we get a solution that can work for everybody, we're not going to roll anything out.
Right.
And I guess I want to push back on that idea a little bit and say, try and find solutions that are as easy and effective to roll out that'll work for the most number of students. And then in doing so, use that to free up capacity so you can take your resources and target the students that most need support. So like I was mentioning earlier, maybe you decide, if our buildings can only open for some students part of the time, let's prioritize bringing in the kids who don't have supports at home. Similarly, I think of teacher capacity. And you know, if teachers can think of, how do I shift things online so that, you know, I'm not having to spend every block hour of the day leading classroom-based instruction. Now, if that can happen independently and online for a lot of students, and they don't need my, you know, constant involvement, can I then take my time and just focus on reaching out to those families where I know the students aren't checking in as much, and making a more concerted effort to help those families and those students who are most in need of support, reallocating the teacher's time and attention in that way. So, I guess just to recap, like I have some real concerns about equity, but I also think there's some real interesting opportunities, and we'll just kind of have to wait and see how it all plays out.